From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh.
We are back for another Thursday with The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And of course, the big news this week is...
Oh, what is it?
Everyone has been waiting for when Tabletop, the huge Geek and Sundry, Will Wheaton, YouTube, massive explosion. Oh, yes, of course. Okay. We won't go there. It's been a hit, and it's really driven a lot of sales in board games. Well, Tabletop Season 3 was funded by Kickstarter. Season 1 and 2 were funded by YouTube. We've been waiting for the news on Season 4. It was supposed to come out, I think, in July initially, then August, then September. Here we are in October, and the news has just come out.
Has it really?
It's going to be a pay-per-view in that. It's going to be an online digital content channel from Legendary, a new service they have called Alpha.
Mm-hmm. You have it's to right pay... up your alley, Mark, it y'all is. Alpha.
Yes, that's right. it's going to be $4.99 a month.
And that's probably American dollars as well.
Of course. So it's like $36 million.
Wow.
You're going to have to pay on a monthly basis. They have said that it will be at least exclusive on that channel until early in inverted commas 2017 when it might hit YouTube. So we don't really know. But in the spirit of that, we will pause now so that all you listeners can go to dicemencometh.com/pay us all the money.
Excellent.
Enter your credit card details in there, and then we'll be back after you have. So now we'll take a pause.
Beep, beep, beep. Wow, that's awesome. Can we retire now?
Yeah, we wish.
I reckon.
Hey, we're back for episode 137 on the 6th of October 2016. What's coming up on the show tonight, Garth?
Well, we have got a show full of showy goodness. We are going to start with going to, I don't know, we just might climb a couple of mountains. We've talked about K2.
Climb every mountain.
Oh, isn't that beautiful? So we've talked about K2 maybe a year ago, maybe a little bit longer, but we finally, and with you as well, Mark, finally convinced you to play one of the expansions, we're going to talk about that in what we've been playing. We're also going to talk about Essen, because that's just a little bit of a game convention that's happening or about to happen. We're also going to talk about dipping my toes, my hands, and various other appendages into the world of online D&D gaming. And we might have to talk about a little competition that we're currently running and Australia's best gaming website.
And Leon, you're in the studio.
I'm here as well.
All right, we've got all that and more coming up on The Dice Men Cometh.
On Edge Radio 99.3 FM, The Dice Men Cometh. Garth, you know how board gaming goes hand in hand with mountaineering?
Yeah.
Like how you can't, like, it goes one, you can't do one without the other. Everyone that owns a board game also climbs mountains.
Well, basically, you're not allowed to climb a mountain unless you have a board game, preferably Twilight Imperium 3 strapped to your back. Isn't
of course.
How it works?
So, no, look, no, we joke. We don't go outside of them.
Yeah. I was going to talk about your tan. But anyway.
See-through.
Look, we talked about K2 by Adam Kaluzka, and Rebel Games maybe a year ago, maybe a little bit longer, because personally I'm a really, really big fan of this game. This very seemingly simple mountaineering game. And I guess, look, starting from that, what I like about it is the theme, because there are not many games about mountaineering in our hobby that I enjoy playing. The one that I enjoy playing most is K2. Now, I had...
What are the mountaineering games you don't enjoy, Garth?
K3.
J7.
Sounds like we're playing Battleship.
My Battleship.
So, look, the reason for this is it must have been Shut Up and Sit Down or someone else who did a video review of this. And I went, I really like that look at that. I like the mechanics. I like the fact that it's a very different theme. and the fact that you get to probably die on a mountaintop. What a way to go. So look, first of all, trying to find this game was really, really tricky because it originally came out in 2010. And look, it's been one of those sort of slow burn games that has got this very decent-sized fan base, but it's never set the world on fire.
I don't know if I've ever seen it in a retail store.
Exactly.
Maybe just one of the bigger ones on the mainland, but certainly not in little old Tassie.
No, exactly right. So once I got this, I then went down the path of the Board Game Geek rabbit hole and saw that there were expansions, and I thought, I want those expansions.
As you do.
And then finally, at this year's BorderCon, which had unhalfbricking games, I was able to speak to them and say, I want some expansion. And they did have a copy of Broad Peak, which came out in 2011. So it's already half a dozen years or so old. But what this is, and I really admire the fact that it comes in a really small box, what it basically does is give you another double-sided map of two potential games to play. It also gives you a whole bunch of new tokens, which we'll get to. And it really integrates nicely into the original game because, yes, Leon, I was able to fit all of that into the very same box.
Excellent.
Which is very, very good. So, look, the premise of K2 is that you're climbing mountains. Indeed. Not surprising. Do you want to guess the name of the mountain that you're climbing? Yes, it is K2. Yeah. So there you go. Now, in this Broad Peak, which is the expansion and the game we're going to talk about tonight, you are climbing what was affectionately known as K3, but is now called Broad Peak, which makes it much more thematically interesting.
Mm.
And we're going to talk primarily about the side of the map that deals with the traverse side of things, which does make the game a little bit longer than the base game of K2. Now, very quickly, on the reverse side of this double-sided board technology, there is a very similar style to the normal K2 map. However, it's a race up the top that is three goes shorter, so it has one of the seasons cards, the weather cards, less.
Ah.
It also doesn't allow you to play tents, which is a big part of K2 because that's where you're going to be able to just at least get a little bit of respite from the awful, awful conditions that you're going to face as part of those weather tokens.
So you're saying it's not as intense?
And what it also does is it allows you to actually dig into the mountain. To offset the fact that you can't have tents,
Is that the snow caves?
You can have snow caves, which are temporary sort of ways that your climbers can at least survive some of the hardships. But we're not going to talk about that because we didn't play that. What we did play was the traverse. Now, what I initially like about it is the fact that it's so simple. It really just fits into the whole theme of K2, which is that every player is going to have a deck of their own individual climber cards. Now, these climber cards are two sorts. You've got the actual climbing itself, which is anywhere from 1, 2, or 3 either elevation or de-elevation.
Delevation.
And then you have a
decline.
Whole bunch. Decline even. Then you have a whole
going
bunch of...
Going downwards.
Yeah.
Jeez, that's not technical at all.
Okay,
Leon.
Sorry.
Then you've also got the acclimatization cards, which are the blue ones, which are you filling yourself up with oxygen so that you can make the next step up this mountain because you're basically going to try and go from 6,000 feet up to 8,000 feet plus. And that's what's going to give your climbers oxygen so that you do not die on the mountain.
Affectionately, we called those the suck it in or the suck it up cards.
Yeah, and they're very, very handy.
Yeah.
As someone who's lost a hell of a lot of climbers on the mountains of K2 and Broad Peak. So the way this differs from the base K2 is that, first of all, on your very first turn, you are going to have to make a choice. You will have to decide whether one or both of your climbers, or however you choose to do your movement part, is going to go up the left-hand side or the right-hand side of the mountain. And the way you want to be scoring points is going from one all the way around to the other and go and scale the three peaks, because this one doesn't just have the one summit where you'll get your maximum 10 victory points. It has three of them, and you'll be getting, in a new introduction for K2 and the expansion, a declining amount of victory points depending on what position you are when you end up at the summit, whether you're the first climber there, the second climber there, and so on. So they've got a little sort of victory point stack where you don't know exactly how many victory points you're going to get until you take your token, have a look at it, and go, well, look, I was the third climber there, and therefore I got two victory points. So that's a very different style of climb because it does make the game longer, although it has the same number of weather tiles associated with it. It does alter the strategy involved because, yes, you can go from left to right and you can try and stay as high up on the mountains as possible, but, geez, moving up the top is really, really tricky. And it is not just doubly hard to move. The acclimatization effects just suck the oxygen right out of you.
Yeah, so there's quite a few spots that require two, some even that require three extra movement points to move up. And then, Garth, as if they haven't made it difficult enough with that, you've got avalanches, for goodness sake.
Well, that's the completionist in me, because the avalanches was a little mini expansion that was separate to this again.
You mean we didn't have to have those?
No, we didn't have to, but look, we're climbing mountains here, Mark. Avalanches are a reality. As an elite athlete, you should know that that's just one of the things that will crop up from time to time.
Of course.
And the avalanches, they are one tough mofo because what they immediately do, rather than having a movement effect or a weather effect, they have anyone who's not in a tent effect. You just get pushed one tile further away from the summit, which when you're trying to expend so much movement to go up to those tiles, when especially it costs you two or three movement points to get up there, that can really alter your strategy.
That's right. It's effectively a waste of a whole turn.
Yeah.
If you haven't managed to get yourself in someone's tent.
Exactly. And getting yourself into each other's tent is a little bit of a difference, again, from the base game, because you only get one tent in this game.
Yeah.
You don't get one tent per each of your climbers. And the way that they allow that to work is that you can spend movement to basically package up your tent and put it back in your backpack and carry it along again. So that adds another dimension to the strategy side of things, because the one thing I did, which was a horrible, horrible mistake from turn one, is I decided to send one climber up the left-hand side and one climber up the right-hand side, and then went, oh, geez, one climber, he's not going to have anywhere comfortable to sleep for the next 20-odd days of this game. And he died. Like, he died valiantly.
Yes.
So I want to sort of tip my hat to that. But only one of Garth's climbers did make it home. And that was very sad. So I did commiserate, and we had a wake. That was quite nice. So, look, this game is tough. This scenario is tough.
Is it?
Shut up, Leon. And the reason I'm telling you to shut up is because Leon did win.
Just a tad.
Or so he thought.
It was wrong.
It was wrong.
It was wrong. Yeah.
Leon, look, he cheated.
Unbeknownst to him, of course.
No.
He did it very innocently.
We checked through the rule book a few times, but there was a few beers had, so we might have missed it.
Yeah, exactly. But look, Leon, you were officially the winner.
Yeah.
But not really, so we'll have to sort of play it a couple of more times and see how deadly you get, because I reckon your climbers will just die horribly.
Well, the first time I played this with you, I think there was only two of us,
yep,
and I came second, but it was very, very close, and you'd played it quite a fair few times before me, so
yep.
I think I'm just naturally good at this game. I don't know how.
No, well, maybe you and mountaineering just go hand in hand like you were talking about before.
Of course, I'm a very big outdoorsman. Is that what they're called? Sure.
So look, this game is a really fantastic little addition to K2, if this is your kind of game. And what I like about it is, it's at its core, it's a very simple game to teach. You've only got those two types of cards. Each player has only got their own individual deck. You're going to play through the deck exactly one time. You will play every single card before you get a chance to shuffle that deck again and go for one more turn. So there is not a huge amount of complexity in this game. It's actually one of the very few games, Mark, that I've played solo because I wanted to teach myself how to play it correctly. But I do like the fact that that is also very much about the risk and reward. You can try and get both your climbers up to the top of the mountain and survive, but chances are they're not going to come back down. Or you can play it slow and steady and not be necessarily going for the very top summit, but getting two climbers at a decent level and getting sort of the respective victory points.
Yeah, and look, I have to admit, I didn't enjoy K2 initially because maybe I didn't quite get that risk and reward. I just struggled with the decision-making of when should I go up, when should I pause. My climbers were dying. Whereas with this one, with the three peaks, I guess if Leon cheated, that means I won because we were very close.
Well,
but I did enjoy that managing of the decisions, particularly with the one one tent. I don't want to sleep in Trent. My two climbers go up together, and I had that thing of sharing of the tents where one would go up a little bit further, then the other guy would catch up and pitch the tent, and then because he'd been resting, he'd go up a bit further. So it was like a bit of a team effort. Then we went right across the top and then back down. And I quite enjoyed that. So I certainly would be willing to play this. And to me, it did change it up from K2.
Yeah, so I've played this twice now. I've played the original K2 with Garth as two, and now this expansion with four. Any game, I think, that plays two and up, the two-player game is always completely different than the other games. And normally, the two-player game, generally, most of the time, is kind of rubbish compared to the other games. Like, you want to play it with four most of the time, or three, or so on. I found the two-player game just as enjoyable as the four-player game. And the thing about this is, as you said, it's rather simple. That this is a game you could very easily have on your shelf next to your Ticket to Ride, next to your Small World, your Carcassonne, or whatever, as an introductory game.
Yeah.
It should probably be a lot bigger in the hobby than it is. It's just the simple fact that it came out once, I had one printing, and then went away. If they'd reprinted it now, maybe tried to do it on the cheap, but still make it look good, I can't, like I said, I can't see why it wouldn't be as good a seller as those other games.
Yeah, well, look, it's just outside the top 100 in the thematic rank, which I think is well justified. It's actually higher in the family rank. It's in about 55th position, which shows you that it is not just a serious adults-only gamers game kind of thing, and I really like that because what it does come with is a family variant, which is in every one of each player's decks. You've basically got a get-out-of-jail-free card, like a rescue card where your climber has been picked off the mountain. Okay. Now, I've never played that variant, but it's great that it's in there so that younger gamers can have a go.
Yeah, and any game that's in the BGG ranking, any category that's 100 or less, means it's still kind of a big deal.
Re-implemented.
Because we've played many games before that we've gone, that's really good, and then looked at it and gone, like, that's number 600 or something, and gone, how is that possible? So the fact that this is still in the hundreds or so shows you that it is good, and if it had another reprint right now or a few years ago, it would probably be even higher up and in a lot more people's collection. But sadly, it's,
it does look like, and I must admit, this had escaped me, is that, according to Board Game Geek, it was re-implemented in 2013 with a new version where it was called Mount Everest. Now, I'm not sure whether that's just the Polish version, because this is produced by Rebel Games, which is a Polish company.
No, well, look, the difference is, and I looked into this one when it was reprinted a couple of years ago, the difference is with the Mount Everest re-implementation, you're not just solely acting as a climber. You're basically acting as a climber who is a guide, and you are taking up a whole bunch of tourists. So you have to balance the act of who do you want to get to the top, because you've got some tourists who are the higher paying tourists and some tourists who are not.
Oh, wow.
And pretty universally, it has been not as well regarded as the simple game of, I have two of my own climbers. That is who I am. I want to get them to survive. Yeah. I want to get them both to the summit. Mm. So look, I really enjoy K2. I think the Broad Peak expansion, the fact that it adds two more styles of gameplay is a really nice implementation. The game version that we played, the Traverse, also adds Traverse tiles, which means that you get some bonus points for going up one side and down the other side. Look, I really, really enjoy it. I'll happily play it with anyone who wants to play it with me. I play it quite a lot on Board Game Arena, and I enjoy the fact that you can play the summer and the winter and anywhere from 2 to 5 players. It's a very versatile game, and one that at its core is so simple to play, but offers so much depth of strategy and decision-making. For me, it's a really highly recommended game.
Oh, and there you go. If you want to challenge Garth to a game of K2 on Board Game Arena, we have now posted on our fantastically amazing website, dicemencometh.com, we have put up a new page where you can learn all about what Garth and I do on our online Gaming with You, Carter, and Moi de Jeu, and Board Game Arena, and even challenge us there because we've got our usernames. We're looking forward to playing some games with you. That was Example with the Love Kickstarts on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. And long-time listeners would have recognized that as my occasional Kickstarter theme for my little Kickstarter updates. And before I throw to Leon, who's going to tell us all about Essenspiel in Germany, a huge shout out to friend of the show and Dice Woman Tanya, whose art is in a Kickstarter right now. It's been up for
24 hours,
yeah,
maybe?
A bit over a day. It's already almost doubly funded in the first day. This is Dracula's Feast by Bluebeard Entertainment, and Tanya has done the amazing artwork on this game. We're actually going to have her on the show next week to talk about that game and all the other things she's been up to. But check that one up. Check that one out on Kickstarter, Dracula's Feast. Now, Leon.
Yes.
Are you going to Germany soon?
No, but I was there earlier this year.
Oh, there you
which
go.
Which is amazing to say.
How convenient.
Yes.
But is this where you did all the research for this break?
Sure. But excellent. I was only in Berlin, which was awesome, by the way. Yes. So the Essenspiel Board Game Festival, named after the German city it is held in, it has been around since 1984. Every year it gets bigger and bigger. This year it is held between the 13th and 16th of October. So I'm going to tell you some of the biggins, and maybe not some of the biggins, that are going to be there that just took my interest.
Sounds good to me.
So the first one is a game that I kickstarted and is being released at Essen from Devil Pig Games called Carnage. It is a fast, fun, fighting war game where you take control of four fantasy races, and they're the usual. The humans, the orcs, the dwarfs, and the goblins. But there is an expansion to have a fifth race, which is the devil pigs themselves.
Not the hobbits.
No, get them out of there. We want big, sweaty, nasty pigs. So it's each army is a deck of cards. Each card has a defense number, an attack, and where it is placed on the field. Because you build your army in different rows, like your infantry at the front, your long range at the back, so on and so forth.
Okay.
Then on your turn, you get some more reinforcements in, and then you go attacking. So it looks pretty simple, but it's got some depth to it as well. Think Summoner Wars mixed with a Warhammer, but with a more cartoony art.
Okay, and you can't go wrong in a game where when you destroy your opponent's army, you've got to yell out, "Carnage!" And everyone else has got to call out, "Yeah!" Like, that's in the rules.
Well, you can go wrong, but hopefully it doesn't. We'll see soon. The next game by Funforge Game, a little game called Hop. It is a card game, but it also has a little 3D board where you put your standees on.
Is it about home brewing?
If you want to say so, Mark. If you get drunk enough while playing it, it's about home brewing if you like.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, it's a game about climbing clouds.
It's exactly about home
brewing. In order to reach the top of the sky. It's a competitive game, but you also get extra points for helping each other. The reason I mention it is because the artwork looks amazing. It looks like a Pixar movie come to life.
I was going
to
say. Yeah.
So it looks like Up, and actually the movie Hop, even though it's got nothing to do with rabbits, and all other type of Pixar films. But yeah, it looks really, really pretty.
All right, so that's cool.
Hopefully the game is as good as what it looks, but we'll soon see.
Clearly it has to be family friendly, so I might have to have a look at that for the little children.
Indeed. From Modiphius Entertainment, we have Siege of the Citadels. It is a reboot of the game from the 90s called Mutant Chronicles, but it is now designed by two absolute nobodies. Richard Borg, who did something called Command and Colors and Memoir 44, like the best war game ever or something.
Yes.
And this other guy, I've never heard of this guy, Eric Lang.
I think it's pronounced Lange.
Possibly. He's done this Blood Rage thing. And this Dice Master thing that apparently everyone in the world plays.
And he did some others?
He did some other... Oh, see what you did, you little scamp there. So this isn't actually coming out just yet, but it is being demoed there and coming out next year. And it's your usual miniatures, dungeon crawly, all your bells and whistles and stuff.
Yeah, and what it also has is 60 hours to go on Kickstarter.
Oh.
Now, it was going for $60,000, which is pretty ambitious.
Yeah.
It's only got over $300,000. So it's going to be made. If we get the podcast out in time, you might hear this while the Kickstarter is still live. Look, if you're a fan of shooting things and lots of plastic, and I'm very surprised that Leon hasn't backed it.
No, I've got enough of them at the moment.
Yeah.
Oh, and even there was some guy helped them called Is that Kevin Bloody Wilson or is no, that a different Kevin Wilson?
It's not Kevin Bloody Wilson. It is Kevin Wilson who's been known to make the odd game or two. Especially that damn Android, the game that are we still not playing?
Arkham Horror and many, many other fantasy flights.
Is it the starting your turn, Leo?
Behemoths.
Yeah, possibly.
Yes.
So like I said, a bunch of nobodies made a game. So next we've got from CGE Games. This is just a quick one. A game called Adrenaline. It is a cross between a light Euro game and a video game first-person shooter.
I remember hearing about this. This is trying to implement first-person shooting
into a board game.
And it's got like a slight Euro-y, so it's not all Ameritrash type stuff. It's Euro-y bits as well.
Oh, because there was one of those where you... walking through like a cavern, and the board changes, and there's like a game master type person who's pointing out new boards, and you have that first person view of the cavern. You can see a tunnel off to your left, and if you've got a torch, you see a slightly different view. Wow!
So yeah, the board looks pretty, and there's a robot with a smiley face. So
yeah,
that'll do.
And the fact that bringing in, you know, arguably one of the most popular video game mechanics, first person shooting, and trying to implement that into a board gaming thing, it just sounds like it should be something that Czech Games Edition is doing, because they're all about doing trialing crazy new ideas. Although, and I think that's fantastic.
Has anyone played Frag, the board game?
Yes,
which is like a third person view of that. First person Doom or Unreal or any of those
sort of games.
Yeah,
I'd forgotten about that, yes.
Right, by Z-Man Games, they did this thing called Pandemic. You may have heard of it. They're doing a new...
Which copy?
A new implementation called Pandemic Iberia, Pandemic Iberia, which is set in the Iberian Peninsula between Portugal and Spain. It is set in the 1848.
It's Spanish flu.
Yeah. Where you take on the role of nurses, railwaymen, rural doctors, sailors, and more as you try to cure malaria, typhus, yellow fever, and cholera.
Isn't that what we named our diseases?
Probably close to it, yeah. So, yeah, you've got to travel around by carriage and boat and train to try and stop all these diseases. So it's pandemic, but a bit new, which, yeah, it's going to sell a bajillion copies as it does.
There is some particular reason why they've done this, and I can't quite recall. Which makes really interesting news. However, I am also going, does the world really need this?
Yeah, I mean, I'm wondering if there's a trench across that Iberian Peninsula which has sharks in it, and during your travelling you can actually jump
one of those sharks? Yeah.
Oh, very clever. Oh, all right, another from Z-Man Games, A Feast for Odin.
I've heard a bit about this one.
So you use the central board of A Feast for Odin. Players have to hunt, gather basic materials, refine those materials, develop into buildings, buying ships, raiding, and all that kind of stuff, your usual Viking-type shenanigans, in order to get more victory points. And again, this is designed by another nobody.
Yeah?
Yui Rosenberg.
Uber.
I know. I just wanted to see how quickly he jumped
in. Is there farming in this for fun and profit?
Possibly. He did these other two games, Agricola.
And it's Agricola.
And Caverna, which I think you guys are playing as soon as we leave here.
Something like that, which I think are the number 5 and number 7 games of best of all time.
So this is
like
his big next new monster, but it's Vikings because that's the theme of the year. Next to Mars, Vikings is the theme of the year.
Yeah, that's true. Look, this one I think I've heard a lot of good positive stuff about it. I'm not surprised that people are clambering to try and get it because he's got such a massive following anyway. It just seems to be that, when farming's not enough, let's go cave farming. When cave farming's not enough, let's go Viking farming.
Cave farming with Vikings!
Woohoo!
Alrighty, the next one from Matigo Games is a game that has a horrible-looking box called Innis.
Oh, so you're that person who doesn't like the art, is that right?
Yeah. No, I think it was all of us, I believe.
Yeah, we did talk about
it. Very
this
squiggly
one.
Wriggly,
it's
isn't
not
it?
The greatest. But either way, it is the next game similar in the line of Cyclades and Comet.
Yes.
Two games that we both highly recommend. So Innis, it's a game where you play as the Celts and Celtic history. But the interesting thing about this is there's three different ways to win. You can win by leadership, which is leading a lot of different people, by land, which is owning the most amount of land, and also leading by religion, which is have different shrines in different areas of the board.
Thank God for that.
Yeah.
And look, I have to say, it wasn't that we didn't like the art. I think it was the colour palette, you know, talking about Celtic times being dark and broody, and this has very bright colours. It just doesn't look quite right.
Yeah, it's rubbish. Anyway, so from Portal Games, we have Cry Havoc.
Which
is a game that I've already pre-ordered and I'm looking forward to.
And Unleash the Dogs of War!
Yes. So this is kind of like a sci-fi version of Kemet, which is awesome. So it's a card-driven asymmetric area control war game set in a brutal sci-fi fiction setting, where you command one of several different races, and you've got your own little custom minis, and board, and Ra, and Lu, and it's supposed to be really good.
Well, I think it's Tom Vassell who says that he played it, and it's never leaving his collection.
I think
is right?
I think he said, the first thing he said was, it's going to be a miracle if this isn't his game of the year.
Yeah, wow.
Is this based on an actual computer game franchise? Because if it isn't, it should be one.
It looks very similar to Crisis. It looks like Crisis. Yes, the book looks like Crisis. Yes, which there actually is a board game of, which is supposed to be alright, but we've never played because it's like $200.
Yeah, well, I just noticed that one of the designers is Michael Oryx, who is a designer who's done, is it Niroshima Hex? I'm pretty sure his involvement is also in the, oh, what's the iPad game that we talked about that is now a board game?
Niroshima Hex.
Oh, This War of Mine.
This War of Mine, yeah.
He's involved in that too. Well, there's your pedigree of that. And yeah, Niroshima Hex. Basically, if it's like a big version of that, I'm in quite happily. Because that game is real good. All right, some smaller stuff here. We've got some expansions coming out before the end of the year, but they're all supposed to be at Essence. We've got an expansion for Cyclades yet again.
Yay! Called, it's the smallest little expansion, but I love
it. Called Monuments. That's a game that I think the base game could probably use with a reprint, because I never really see the base game anywhere. It keeps bringing out expansions.
You should come around to my house. I've been trying to get people to play this damn game for years. I've had Titans. I ordered it and finally got it from Milsim's before the whole Milsim's issue, and now their Rebirth, which is fantastic. But it is sitting there, all punched, but no one to play it with.
Yeah, we'll get there eventually. The game Deos, which has been very popular, has an expansion called Egypt, which essentially takes the entire deck of cards out of the game and replaces it with an entire new deck of cards. It's like 400 cards.
Okay.
So it's almost like a sequel, but it's just replacing the deck and it makes the game completely different.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, that's another game that Mark and I have played quite a bit of.
Yeah.
On Bois Tejou, is that right?
Oui.
I may have to get on that because I do want to play that game. And does anyone own that?
Trent owns that.
Yeah, Trent owns does.
Yeah, cool. We did actually buy it for his birthday, I think it was a year or two ago.
Yeah, a couple of years ago, I think. Yeah.
And one that I'm interested in, Pandemic, easy. The Cure, which is the DICE version of Pandemic, which is something that I'm a big fan of, but it kind of got lost. But yet, it gets an expansion, which is grand, called Experimental Meds. There's a few different modular stuff, which, and I do love a modular expansion, so if you like things, add it. If you don't, you don't. But one thing it does add is like a dozen new characters.
Okay, awesome.
And considering the base game only has like five, that's pretty pimp.
Yeah.
Another one, Seven Wonders Duel, a game which everyone loves, apparently, but for some reason we haven't played yet.
Well, again, I've got it. I just need to find a single person
We really do need to do that. So we can do it. That's getting an expansion called Pantheon. Don't know what it's about, but it's an expansion to a game that everyone likes.
Yeah, I did actually have a little look at this from the Board Game Geek. He does a whole bunch of series of reviews, and he did a really nice little mini review of it. Mm. Said it added quite a bit of it. It's got a nice little board that adds onto the top of the existing board, which is fantastic. Mm. The only thing I'm a little bit concerned about is that it turns what is a very simple half an hour version of Seven Wonders and adds a little bit of complexity that arguably isn't needed.
And look, it'd be remiss of me if I didn't take this opportunity to point out that it's Pantheon, which is a set of gods.
What did I say? Pantheon.
Yeah, which is and the not Parthenon, which is the building place in Greece. Yes. So.
Well,
it's okay, Leon. You're doing good with words this week.
Apparently not. All right. And there's also three games that are big games that people like that are now going to have card game versions of them.
Ooh. Okay.
The first one and biggest one is Power Grid.
Power Grid, the card game.
Power Grid, the card game.
Okay.
Which is coming out and looks, dare I say it, fascinating.
Well, I think anything, and look, Power Grid is one of those games that has a certain place in the pantheon of our gaming.
It does, Garth.
But you have to be in the right kind of mood and with the right kind of gamers to play it, I think, because it's certainly not for everybody.
Yeah.
So I think having maybe an abridged version of that could expand its appeal.
Yeah. Coal Baron, the card game.
Oh, Okay.
Yeah, I reckon that would work really well.
Yeah, okay.
And Manhattan Project, the card game, which was kickstarted earlier in the year, is supposed to be coming out. So that's all the main ones. The other ones I will mention really quickly. A game called Mini Terror, which was released a few years ago. It is now a new version of it. It's basically a more family-friendly version of Agricola or Caverna.
Perfect.
But it looks really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Martians, A Story of Civilizations. Now, this isn't the big, awesome Mars game. That is something else, which is the re-implementation of Robinson Crusoe. It's not that one, but it's another Martian game, which is like a...
It's a story-based one, this one, isn't it? It has a narrative element?
No, I'm not... I think it's just a worker placement-y type game.
And not to be confused with the terraforming Mars game,
no,
which I've heard really great things about, and it is certainly something on my hotness list.
Yeah. Rising 5, Runes of Asteros. It is a co-op deduction and adventure game that is set in a sci-fi world that uses app integration, supposedly very well.
Yeah.
It has art by Vincent Dutrat.
Oh, him! Oh. Vincent Dutrat!
Which is a person that we like.
Well, we do, because we talked about him last week. Mm. Again, he's done Lewis and Clark, he's done Discoveries.
Yeah.
And
Room Service, which won that award and then no one played it. Well, it's true. No one buys it, but it looks all right. Yeah, that's pretty much it. There's hundreds and hundreds of stuff there, and I will actually recommend something that is much more successful than us, but I'm going to recommend it anyway. Rado did a YouTube of his own Essen preview, what he's looking forward to, a top 10. Everything he mentioned on his top 10, other than Colbert and the card game, I didn't mention.
Okay.
So he's got 9 games on his list.
That aren't as good as the ones you've chosen.
Maybe.
I bet there are a lot of two-player games that he's talked about.
Yeah,
possibly, yes. But yeah, so that's one to check out as well. It is a bit hard to get information on it, sadly, for the Essen stuff, being is it Europe and Germany and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, YouTube's your best friend when it comes to that. But there's some stuff that's all that stuff is going to be available, I believe, in little old Australia and the States, most of it before the end of the year.
Fantastic. And I do know that there are at least 2 or 3 regular Dice Men listeners who are going to be in Essen in that very convention hall, seeing it with their own 2 or 4 eyes. So I think that's pretty amazing. We might have to talk to them.
We shall.
That was Porches with Car here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with the Dice Men cometh Garth, Leon and Mark here tonight. Now, Garth, you have been getting more and more into role-playing. I don't know what's happening there.
Well, you've probably just noticed that I am wearing my wizard cape.
Yeah, you are, and we have talked about this wizard thing, Garth.
Yeah, well, it's just one of many facets to me. Now, what I wanted to talk about is the fact that, yes, I have delved a little bit deeper into the world of role-playing, and this week, Monday to be precise, is when I actually took that step and started down a path or a dungeon, as it were.
A dungeon hole.
Into some online D&D. Now, I wanted to have a little bit of chat about this and sort of edumacate you guys about this, because it's a whole new world, to quote several Disney movies, of how you can play D&D.
I think it's just the one Disney film.
Yeah, well, we'll leave Aladdin to the side.
No, what about the world of laughter? I think there's a world of tears, a world of hopes, and some other worlds.
It's a weird video collection you have, Mark.
Yeah, I was hoping for deafness there for a little bit. But anyway.
Anyhow.
So look, I'm going to talk about this campaign that we've only just started. Now, we've only done 1 2-and-a-bit-hour session on this, but in the week leading up to it, it was all about character creation.
Mm.
Now, one of the things that I'm still on the fence about is whether or not I actually enjoy the character creation process in the whole RPG stuff. Because you speak to a hell of a lot of RPGs and they go, that's it. I get the ability to create the kind of character I want. I love the fact that I can put my personality or my traits or my this or my that and turn it into this sort of magical pretend character. Leon, you want to say something?
Yes, I was just going to say I'm mad for that kind of stuff. When every year when a new wrestling game comes out and you can create your own wrestlers and stuff, I spend more time doing that than actually playing the game itself.
That's excellent. Well, none of that made sense because I didn't know wrestling games came out every year, so that's fantastic. Oh,
Leon,
you're talking PlayStation
video games,
and video game
you?
Stuff, aren't you?
Yeah.
There we go.
Because I was going to say there's the visual element of this is what I want my wrestler to look like, whereas obviously in RPGs, as in dice rolling RPGs, you never see your character because it's all in your head.
Correct. And this is where there's the other side of the RPG coin, which is a lot of the time where I find myself in that I'm going to trust the GM and I will happily take any one of the either the pre-gen characters that they've made, or they know what kind of campaign they want to run. I'll happily run with whatever character fits, because otherwise I'm just going to be that smart ass person who's always going to try and talk their way out of something eventually and be that same person over and over and over
again. Yeah, it's like a night of improv theatre where it's like, Garth, you're a cross-dressing Welsh furniture maker whose favourite hobby is collecting stamps. Go! And you've got to inhabit that character straight away.
Well, that's easy. Yeah. That's buddy, 23 hours out of 24, Mark. How did you know? Yeah.
Sometimes when you are given a choice, you will go, well, it's the first time I'm playing it, so I'll play the thing I'm familiar with. Same as like with video games for me, if it's a fantasy, I always choose like a warrior because I generally won't choose a mage because they're more harder and I can't be asked.
Exactly. Give me just some hack and slash.
Yeah, and I go, the second playthrough, maybe I'll do something different, and then I never play it again.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And this is where I must say, using the online system, and the one that our GM, Oren, is using is Roll20. Now, Roll20 is a website that's been around now for around about 3 years. It's had, over the life of it, around about 1 million users participate in this. So it's not a tiny, insignificant number.
So most of our listeners, but not all of them.
No, maybe 30, 40%.
Yeah.
But what this offers you is the collaboration between the GM and the players. It also allows you to just dive into another RPG group. You don't have to just know your, you know, friends who play it or that local gaming group, which I think is great. What it allows you to play is a whole bunch of different systems because it's essentially almost open source where the system can be fitted into the basic mechanics of it. And from a playing point of view, creating a character sheet was a really easy situation because you would just open up your character sheet, you'd be able to type it all in, a whole bunch of stats and numbers would basically auto-populate, which is a whole bunch of the issue for me personally, because only being still relatively new in this, every time I create a character sheet, I'm so uncertain of whether I'm doing it right, because I might only be creating one D&D character every 6 months, and I might create a Cthulhu character every week or two because they die, but that's not something that we're playing that often. Yeah. And it might be the same for Pathfinder again, or if we're using Fade or whatever the case may be, I'm just not confident in the fact that I'm getting it right. So what I like about this, and I'll use spells as the example, is that you just type onto the list of spells, the spell name pops up and you click and drag it into your character sheet.
Yeah.
So you know that the stats and the modifiers and everything are going to automatically be correct,
which is just
awesome. Second thing is how easy it is to actually jump on and play. Now, yes, you create an account that it's free, but then you log in and you're immediately given the games that you're currently active in. And at any time, you can jump in and alter your character sheet. You can have a look at the chat transcript and see what the situation is. The GM, should they choose to, can give you little bits of information along the way. But what I really like about it is that during gameplay, it's that visual look of, you know, the space that you're inhabiting. And you've got a bit of a feel for dimensions. You've got a feel for the lighting. It does have dynamic lighting. So when you're in caves, you can see or not see, depending on if you've got dark vision or if there are lanterns lit, which is a really cool little feature. And it also allows you to see a bit of an overview about what it is that you're going to be trying to do, because you've got your other characters and fellow players in there. You've got your NPCs in there. You can always click on them and get a bit of their bio. You can't look at their character sheets.
Yeah, okay.
So you can't get the opportunity to metagame. You can't see their health, so you don't know how strong they are, which is great. It just allows you, and more importantly, allows me, that visual aid to be able to get a bit of a feel for this game.
And so, Garth, are you playing this with like headphones and a microphone on where you're chatting, or is it just typing?
No, headphones and a microphone. Okay. So this does offer video and voice. It also offers text. But what we're using is another program called Discord, which is just for the communication side of things, which is also the program that I've been using for Tabletopia, which is sort of a games system that doesn't actually enforce the rules, but it allows you to talk with players all over the world, and a very simple system that will allow you just, you know, have a chat, give you a little bit more of a feel like I'm around the table. So look, that's really it. I didn't want to talk too much about the campaign because, first of all, I didn't want to do research and spoil what the campaign is going to be like for us.
Yeah.
But I also didn't want to focus on that. I'd rather focus on the opportunity that a lot of people have to jump in here. There's a big bold heading that says find a group, and you just go click and you try and join a group and just start RPGing. So yeah. I think from that point of view, it can be really approachable for someone who's probably done it a little bit. I wouldn't dare say that you go in there as your first opportunity, your first experience in RPG, but it's a good second step.
And look, we, all of us, I think, particularly you and I, though, Garth, you know, we have really been enjoying the role playing that we've been doing. And, you know, when you also look at that, we've played Descent and Imperial Assault. There's such a crossover now between role playing and board games, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And we were actually talking in some chat only a couple of days ago how we'd love to see a Descent and Mansions of Madness crossover for Descent into Madness. Wouldn't that be yes. brilliant?
That could be a thing.
Now, Leon.
Yeah.
We've got a competition, haven't we?
We do indeed.
Do you want to tell the listeners about it?
Oh, probably. We are giving away not one, not seven, not 29, but two copies of Medici.
We are.
And we are doing that via our new website.
Woohoo!
Which is there a the in it? I should probably know this.
No, it's just Dice Men Cometh.
DiceMenCometh.com.
And look, thank you so much to Grail Games. They've given us, as you said, two copies of Medici to give away. All you've got to do to enter this competition, it's so simple.
You would think so.
You've just got to, I was going to say troll through, but we want no trolling on our website. You've got to look through our website. There's a bit of it there now. It's growing and growing like an amorphous thing. And you've got to find, somewhere in there we've hidden something that you'll probably obviously be able to work out has a link to Medici.
Yes.
When you do, click on that thing and it'll automatically pop up. For most of you, it'll pop up an email that you can send to us with feedback on our website, but more importantly, entering the competition. Now, I have heard that some people, the little pop-up thingy doesn't work, but those people have seemed to enter the competition anyway. So look, if you click, the pop-up thing doesn't work, just send us an email to dicemencometh@gmail.com. We'll get that as well. But please check out our website and see what's there.
That was mostly people using Chrome?
I think it was. So
if you go although and I created that on my computer using Chrome, although I am on a Mac. So I don't know whether it's Chrome on a PC as opposed to Chrome on a Mac.
Perhaps. Hard to say.
Anyway, yeah. The point is we would love more entries. We have been getting heaps and heaps of entries, which is really encouraging because it means people are getting a chance to look at the website and, again, giving us feedback, which is fantastic.
Yeah, really
and
great look, feedback.
Yeah, and look, there's been a lot of really positive stuff, which is awesome. There have been a few people who have a little bit more technological nous than us, and they've been putting in a little bit of a, hey, why don't you try this kind of thing, which is awesome as well.
Yeah.
But look, we really want this website to go well, and most importantly, we want to give these games away thanks to Grail
Games.
As
much feedback as humanly possible, because we want this to be a website that you would want to visit. If it's a website you don't want to visit, then tell us why.
That's right. Now, we're going to go. We're going to come back next week, and as we said, we're going to have Tanya on, talking about her Kickstarter, talking about what she's been up to. But until then, go check out our website, enter our competition, check out all the other things we're doing there, and play lots of games. We'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.
Yakida.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.